What's up, mommies? Get ready to pull them jeans up high and tight.
We're back.
YMH Live 3.
It's all going down November 20th.
5 p.m. Pacific and worldwide.
The return of my sister, OMG Maria.
Oh my God, what?
And the return of the greatest YMH guest of all time, Danny Brown.
Leader of the Cool Guy Club is on his way. Yes, me, Danny Brown, YMH Live. It's really happening.
Plus, original music by Mark Rebier.
Oh, yes.
I can't wait to see Danny Brown react to the heavy segment.
What the fuck, man?
Head on over to ymhvirtual.com and get tickets now.
Four Stroke Gang, Sue Woo! It's happening. I'm coming. Let's go.
Hey guys, we're back for another Tom Talk. This time, I was very, very fortunate to get to speak with former presidential candidate Andrew Yang. He has a really interesting perspective on a lot of things, and we get into it all. I hope you enjoy this talk.
This shit is big time!
Who is Randy?
Don't bring anyone loving to this.
Your mom in the fucking sand!
Andrew Yang, thank you so much for jumping in with me, man. Appreciate it.
Happy to be here, Tom. Been a fan. Admire your work a lot. I think comedians have such a special place in our lives at this point, where you're like some of like the last truth tellers who also know what's going on in the country because you performed in, you know, hundreds and hundreds of clubs.
Yeah.
In places big and small.
I agree. I mean, you do really get a perspective on like the whole thing. You know, so many people live in their own bubble, and when you travel to perform, you see the whole country. It's kind of a fascinating thing. I wanted to thank you for joining because I know we were gonna try something like a year or so ago. So I really appreciate you getting on now, man.
Well, I'm fair now than I was last year.
Yeah, you had a little. I forget what you were doing, but I know it took up some of your time. But this is a wild time. I mean, if you had, you know, during that busy time, it was its own thing. But the way that things have come along, I mean, I was just thinking about how when we talk, we're about the same age. When we talk to people like our parents' age, and you go, you know, before this year, you go like, what was 1968 like? And they're like, oh, it's pretty crazy. And then those people now tell us that wasn't shit compared to what this year has been. And I almost go like, what, really? And there, because we, you know, we grew up on that documentary footage and stories and photos, and they're like, yeah, that's nothing.
Don't you miss the 80s, Tom?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Like, you and I grew up in that, and it was like Karate Kid, the original, Back to the Future.
Yeah.
You know, like all of the 80s movies, or, you know, that just made you feel pretty good.
Yeah, or like, or the way that people used to describe, you know, like you'd have a friend and then their parent was a liberal, and you're like, what does that mean? And someone would go, well, they like trees. And you're like, oh, okay. And then this guy's a Republican, he likes money. And that was like, but everybody kind of like felt like they got along. At least my memory was like, everybody's getting along. I mean, you know, now you get to this year, and in my lifetime, I definitely have never felt anything like this. I'm not an alarmist in the least either. You know, I'm not somebody, but I think it's impossible to ignore that this divide feels much more real, much stronger than anything that I can ever recall.
Oh yeah. It's been supercharged relative to anything that you and I have ever experienced, Tom. And there are some very big structural reasons for why that is. So if people are like, why are we all so pissed off all the time? The media landscape has changed a lot since
Yes.
you and I have been alive. And then you've layered social media over it, which has just supercharged our ability to get pissed off at each other. And it's made it so that we're all in our own information bubbles and we can't agree on facts. And so you can have, you know, a president just argue that he didn't lose, and then millions of people will be like, yeah, and you're like, wait a minute, like, wasn't there something objective that's supposed to decide this? So it's structural. It's not anyone's head, and it's going to continue to get worse, not better, probably, almost certainly.
And that's the thing, is that I guess that's the depressing and discouraging part, because I don't, you know, I joke around a lot, but like I am a hopeful, optimistic person in a general sense. And I mean,
plus you're a parent like I am. You're parents. You look at your kids and being like, holy crap. like, what do we do?
This is madness. I mean, I think one of the big parts that I'm kind of like, I don't know, I feel like what is happening is what you just brought up with news and information, right? Because when we were kids, you know, the nightly coverage, you had like Peter Jennings, Tom Brokaw, Dan Rather, and they basically did the same thing, which was just
same
like...
Same thing. They were the same dude.
They're the same dude. Yeah.
No offense to those guys.
No, but like they were the same dude. You're right. And then when CNN took off, I mean, people now, you know, that's like, it's wild that it's a polarizing thing to say if you grew up in the 80s and you're like, oh, CNN just had rotating anchors, also just reading prompter. I mean, that's what it was. It was just 24/7. If news wasn't on one of the network channels, you could put on this cable channel and just find out news, like just read to you. Now it's like you say a news network and immediately people put you into a category because you're consuming news from one of these outlets. And you're like, well, where do you get news from, man? Your aunt's Facebook page? Like this is, I mean, you know, people have this tremendous bias about where they're consuming. And then, you know, I've talked to people, you think a lot of times.
People should get their news from you, Tom. People
I feel like the same way.
Your podcast and just say, you know what? I'm just not going to pay attention to anything on any of the networks until Tom tells me what's what.
Thank you for that endorsement. Please clip that and let's release that later today, guys. Thank you very much for that endorsement, Mr. Yang. But here's the thing, man. I'm with you in that I don't see how that's going to improve also in the near future. People just collect the bit of information they want to push what they're saying. And you're like, yeah, I don't feel like we're living in the same reality anymore.
You know, the wild thing is that Trump has now turned on Fox and now like Newsmax is the future. And I had to look it up. I was like, what the hell is Newsmax?
Yeah. Or One America.
Cable, the kind of coverage?
One America News?
One America Network.
Oh, yeah. I mean, holy shit. That thing where you're like, dude, like, I mean, I have podcast sets that are better put together than One America News. Like it is straight. It's like straight from his Twitter feed. He's like, why don't you talk about this? And they're like, got it. Like that's not news, man. It's so depressing.
It's super bleak. And again, so there's some structural reasons for it. If you want to try and dig in, I read a book, I guess now is sort of the beginning of my campaign by a social psychologist named Jonathan Haidt. Have you seen his work?
I have not. No.
Well, you're going to love it because it explains a whole lot. So he wrote a book, The Righteous Mind, that said, like, why is it that good people can disagree on politics so viscerally? And he identified six universal human values that cross over cultures and countries. So everyone feels these things. And the six universal virtues are caring, fairness, liberty, loyalty, authority, and sanctity. And so you reflect on that and you're like, well, that's interesting. And what Jonathan identified is that conservative language and media hits on the last three values very heavily, loyalty, authority, and sanctity. Mm-hmm. And liberal and progressive programming hits caring and fairness very heavily. So when you look at it, you're like, why is it that we're disagreeing so much on these things? It's like they're kind of different strings being pulled by different news channels and different media outlets. And so it's dividing us into camps based upon which of those values that we most naturally find resonant. And that's one big reason why we feel the way we do. And the media networks, unfortunately, profit more based upon our polarization.
Yeah, no, that is, I mean, that's a really good analysis of the situation. I also find that those divides and differences in opinion grow more the more you stay separate too, you know? Like a lot of times you engage
and,
someone.
And you know, one thing that used to glue us together, I mean, comedians glue us together. One reason I love you all. But one thing that used to glue us together, Tom, that you remember, because you and I are the same age, though, you say, local newspapers. Remember that shit? Like,
sure.
You get like a local paper and like the local paper just had what's going on in your community. And it wasn't particularly partisan. It wasn't right. Like, hey, you know, like bridges getting repaired. Like, what do you think about that, Democrats or whatever? But now over 2000 local newspapers have gone out of business. So like, mm-hmm. Where the hell are you getting your news? You're getting it from cable news and social media outlets. And there's not really a great alternative. So that's a real problem. And there's actually a law in Congress right now called the Local Journalism Sustainability Act that would help keep some of these local papers alive because they are dying very, very quickly, especially now with COVID.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And that's a good thing because, I don't know, man, you see like, you see people are, I mean, basically people seek out the news that they want to hear now. That's one of the...
And it separates us more into those tribes where we're like, you know, and you just respond to it and you have certain anchors that like the only people you'll listen to. That's one reason why I was like, you know, saying like, oh, they just listen to you, Tom. Is that like if they listen to certain people.
You tweeted something the other day, maybe a week or so ago, or maybe that I was like, oh, this is actually really important because I think it's, you know, it's easy. And as a comic or whatever, an observer, I've been pretty vocal about, you know, how I feel about the current administration. And I go, I've seen that, like the trap though, of like launching into not let's say Trump, but like, you know, Trump supporter or something. And how that every time you do it or you see someone do it, even though you might agree with the critique, you go, man, it feels like this is probably going to just further push a divide, right? Like you end up feeling conflicted.
You know, one of the darkest data points I've seen, Tom, which was fascinating, is that if you show a conservative, like liberal news in their news feed, or vice versa, you show a liberal conservative news in their news feed, it actually has them dig in on their views. It doesn't change it. To your point.
Yeah. Like, so... But what you tweeted was, I actually do think is important. You said if 68 million people do something, and it's grown since then, right? That was like a vote count tally, so 71 or whatever. You said it's vital we understand it. And I think that's a really good point, especially because you had a lot of people pre-election, you know, with their expectations, like, oh, you know, this might be, you know, really show him what's up because they've had 4 years of what, many people, let's say, categorized as utter nonsense and craziness, and they go, it's time to like get this shit out of here. And then you look at that vote tally and you're like, no, like it's a lot of people, man. That's tens of millions of people that said, like, you know, we're on this team. And it's kind of dangerous for people who even disagree with him or those people to just demonize them to such a degree that we can't engage anymore, right?
100%. It's one reason why I cite the Jonathan Haidt thinking so heavily is that, you know, I obviously did not think Donald Trump was a good president or deserved the election.
What?
But of the 71 million people who voted for him, you know, you have to listen and respect and dig in and hear it. And what I'm hearing more and more, Tom, is just that people don't believe that our institutions are actually working for them. And by institutions, you certainly have government at the front of the list, but you'd put media in that list. Mm-hmm. You know, you might throw, unfortunately, hospitals, doctors, scientists, experts, educators, like you name it, everyone's dubious. When I looked at the numbers, because I'm a numbers guy and all that, like I think the most trusted institution in American life still is the military. Mm-hmm. It's like the last thing that people are like, yeah, that does more or less what it's supposed to do. Uh-huh. I mean, even the military has had its problems, but
yeah,
you know, it's like if you look at the public trust in it, it's actually still holding up better than, let's say, Congress.
I mean,
Congress has a 21% approval rating. So there are a lot of folks who see in Trump like a big FU to these institutions that are not working for them, their families, their communities. And there has to be a real challenge for folks who went the other way to be like, okay, like, why is it you all don't think shit is working? And my observation, Tom, is that they don't think shit is working because shit is not working for them.
Right.
Genuinely. Like, you go to some of these towns and you're like, this place, like, used to have a plant, used to manufacture something, or used to have like a particular source of vitality and jobs. And then let's say that source is dried up, and then your kids left, and the people that are still there are struggling with addiction and other things. And then someone comes and says like, hey, you know, vote for this, and like, oh, fuck you. You know, I mean, that's like a reaction that more and more Americans are having.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I just kind of go, I don't know, because I think it was kind of the natural thing for a while to be like, are you out of your mind, to somebody who was supporting Trump, let's say, and then you know, you have legit critiques. Like, they're obviously like, they come with tremendous merit and facts behind them. And then every time you're done doing it, you're like, oh, that, like you said, it's not gonna change that person's mind. And it just feels like the divide is greater. But like, things that you're saying right now make you go, okay, you have to make, it is better to try to understand it. It's not as easy as saying like, these are just uneducated bigots, you know, like it's
71 million people, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of people.
I will say too, like the big lesson I got too is that I thought, and I got this wrong. So I thought there were a lot of people who voted for Trump the first time who were like, yeah, you know, like this isn't really how we govern, and he's just kind of sticking it to folks.
And then
when they saw him go to, they'd be like, oh wait, like that's not good. I mean, I had anecdotal accounts of this where you had like the 80-year-old grandma in Missouri who voted for him in 16 and was like, this is terrible.
Yeah.
Like, I want to vote against this guy. So that was my thesis going in, was that like a significant number of people who voted for him in 16 were souring on him.
Yeah, of course. I mean, a lot of people that are like, even have been lifelong Republicans. Like, I know in my own family, uncles who were like, who just go like, this is, they reached a breaking point. They're like, this is enough. Like, this, like, he's too chaotic.
Yes.
I don't like the way he's treating people. I don't like the way he's governing. And he's, you know, it's a mess. The way, to borrow from him, he's a mess, Andrew. Trump is a mess. So like, people were saying that and you're like, oh, okay. I just thought more people would think that way.
Yeah, exactly. And so the fact that his vote count went up so significantly, where I think it went up by, like you said, I think it went up from maybe 65 million to 71 million or so. So you have to reckon with the fact, it's like, wow, 6 million Americans more than in 2016 said, like, yeah.
Yeah, this guy's really got his shit together. Yeah, this is awesome. Yeah.
Or it was just like a statement of values and like allegiance in a particular way, because I think one of the problems we're having is that we're seeing things through like a lens of cognition, where mm-hmm. it's like, I'll sit down, I'll reason with you, I'll be like, hey, this guy's not a very good president.
Yeah.
And people are operating through like a different lens or framework than cognition. They're doing it based upon emotion or
yes.
Allegiance or tribalism or like association or something, or in some cases still, and this is something I really think the Democrats need to work on, dig into it. It was like aversion. It was like aversion to something that the Democrats seem to stand for in their minds. And that to me was like a very hard lesson, is that I saw Trump's election in 16 as a result of deep-rooted rot. But I also thought a significant number of people would have seen what happened over the last number of years and said, okay, like, this is not the solution. Like, this is not
right.
actually going to help
right.
my cause. And the fact that his vote total went up so significantly, and Democrats lost, last I checked, 7 incumbent seats. They did not expect that. They expected to be +5 to 15, not -5.
What's,
you know, that's like a, that's a massive swing.
It's a massive swing. What's your analysis of, like, as a party, how, like, why is their message not connected? I mean, I've heard a lot of people say, you know, well, a message can't be like anti-Trump is not a message. You know, like, is it that? Is that they're not putting a message forward that's clear that people go like, oh, this is what this stands for, because that shouldn't, I mean, a lot of people think that that wouldn't happen.
My critique has been that the Democratic Party needs to focus on things that are going to actually touch you, touch your life, improve your life. And my chosen policy for that is cash, and still is cash.
Yeah.
You know, right now, my organization, Humanity Forward, is lobbying for cash relief. We should have had cash relief all throughout this pandemic. It's
because what
really tragic that we haven't.
What went out to a stimulus check or two, right? Wasn't that what was?
Yeah, the stimulus check of $1,200 went out in April, and now it's November. I mean, like any economist looks at it and says, like, hey, you should have been doing a lot more than this. The stock market has been pricing in another trillion. It's just DC is stuck and dysfunctional. I talk to several members of Congress every day now because I'm trying to help get something passed. That's how cool I am, Tom.
You're very cool.
Those members of Congress would be like, yo.
Yeah, what's up, man?
So when you ask, like, you know, the Democratic Party messaging, it's you know, the Democratic Party just needs to get down to brass tacks in a way that people can touch and feel. And if it, I think the best way is cash.
Yeah.
I think that the Democratic Party making its case for people like that who feel left out, more and more Americans just feel left out. And the tough part now is that the Democratic Party and the Republican Party are both being increasingly defined by urban versus rural, and like diverse and cosmopolitan versus more homogeneous. And it's toxic. It's awful. You know, I spent a significant portion, not that much. I mean, I spent weeks, maybe months, in Iowa the last 2 years because I was running for president. And that's where you hang out a lot.
Yeah.
And
you get a place
I was a traditional I got places in every place. No, I just Airbnb'd it when I was there.
Okay, all right.
But I developed a real affection for Iowa because you know, it's a great place and the people are great. And Iowa went from being really purple, like Obama wanted in 2012, as an example, to +8 for Trump, and that was after +9 in 16. Like it's gone red, and like that to me should be like a major challenge for the Democratic Party to be like, how is it that we're losing a place we won 8 years ago by such a wide margin? And a lot of folks around the country would be like, well, it's because of race or racism. And then I remind them, it's like freaking a black dude won this place 8 years ago.
Yeah.
Like did they, you know, did they just know, like, not notice, you know, like they were voting for a
black
guy?
They're like, wait, that guy's black?
In 2012?
Yeah.
And so that's like the simplistic answer that unfortunately I think way too many people are embracing. And that answer leads us to greater division, because then you just give up and are like, well, you know, it's like if you have, you know, folks in the rural areas, like they're just not going to vote for our people and like blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, you know, I mean, you kind of proved that wasn't the case not that long ago. And things are getting worse for many, many people in those towns. You know, when I was in Iowa talking to them, I was talking to a doctor there and he said, hey, when people get sick here in Iowa, they lose their jobs because that happens, you know, and then when they lose their jobs, they lose their health insurance. And then they show up to me, the town doctor, and I'm just like, hey, you're not insured. And then they often expire before they can like get new coverage, you know, in the form of government aid. And so he was like, this is totally messed up.
Yeah.
And there's a family doctor in Iowa. And I was like, that sounds deeply fucked up. Mm-hmm. That's what's going on.
Of course.
So there are real problems, and the bigger problem is that like the folks who are living these problems just don't believe in us anymore. Especially if Democrats come in and message around values, it's like, look, I'm a decent person and fairness and the rest of it. It's like, I mean, I like decency and fairness, but you know, like, and some, you know, Democrats are fighting for healthcare improvements in a way that would touch that person's life. We just need to like it. The tough thing, Tom, is like if you were to say to someone, it's like, hey, do you want have health care for that farmer or whatever? And it'll be like, yes. But then if you say, hey, do you want socialized medicine? Then they'll flinch and cringe because they've been trained to hate that by Fox.
It's like branding and wording that is effective, essentially, right? Like saying like socialized medicine, people are like, that's a bad thing.
And this is back to the Jonathan Haidt argument, which I believe is correct, especially now. where what's happening is we're now charging words and terms positively and negatively in various ways, and then like arguing about the terms, and it gets us nowhere. Like no one really wins.
Yes.
And one thing that Republicans are awesome at is naming stuff things that you like or dislike. Like they renamed the estate tax the death tax, and we're like, repeal the death tax. And you're like, yeah, death tax sucks.
Yeah.
But then you're like, hey, should really rich people just be able to, like, you know, give all their stuff tax-free to their kids? People are like, oh, I don't know about that. Like, yeah. You know, if you call it the death tax, though, it seems terrible. Or they renamed anti-union rules right-to-work rules. And everyone's like, right. Yeah, right-to-work.
Of course. You know?
Like they're really, really expert at naming stuff in a way that helps make their case. And Democrats are less good at that.
Yeah, like death tax doesn't, like, you call it the rich kid tax, all of a sudden everyone will be like, nah, we don't want no rich kids.
Yeah, right. It really does. It is kind of a rich kid tax.
I mean, because
but they won that one. Like they actually did greatly reduce the estate tax.
Yeah. Don't you feel like there's a little bit to what we're talking about with? I don't know if you saw the Bill Maher clip that went like pretty viral, where he was basically criticizing some of, like, I guess you would call it like the branding of the Democratic Party, saying like, well, you know, like if we're so hyper focused on like using, like making sure someone's woke and using the right woke term, that's almost a distraction from what you're trying to accomplish as a party and like what your, you know, what your agenda is. If you're all caught up on, did you use the right acronym or this term, that can be a distraction too. Not that like you should ignore, you know, being decent and civil and respecting people and speaking the right way, but like if that's such a big thing for you that like somebody didn't say the word of the day, then that almost fires up, I think, you know, the right even more to go like, look at this nonsense, and it's effective.
It's one reason why I was focused on something that would have a direct and concrete impact on folks, like cash.
Yeah.
Because I think that we've gotten distracted, like you said, by various conversations that aren't addressing the fact that entire communities' way of life has been getting worse and disintegrating for years, decades in some cases. That's the problem in my mind. Like if you address that problem, then it becomes easier to start thinking about other problems, but you should definitely start there. And there's part of me, Tom, that feels like we're almost purposefully being distracted.
Yeah,
it's like we're all just running around, like, you know, like chasing the shine. Certainly under Trump and the media, like, so guilty of this, where anything Trump did, everyone's like, you see what he said, and you're just like, come on. I mean, he's
still, right. It's a distraction.
You know, he's. And so we like the fundamental inequities have been getting worse for decades. And what's wild, Tom, is I had this experience too. It's like, you know, like I ran for president and I genuinely believe that giving everyone money is the way to go. Like, and I think we're going to get there now. 55% of Americans are for it now. It wasn't like that when I was running.
Yeah.
I guess that was, you know, it's like a result of the last 9 months. 74% are for cash relief during the pandemic. I mean, cash is the answer. I felt this way obviously the whole time, but if you reflect back, and I don't know when you first heard about me in the campaign, I think you and I have some friends in common.
Yeah.
It's like, it was pretty far out when I first arrived on the scene. You know what I mean? Like it wasn't a terribly mainstream idea.
Universal basic income.
Universal basic income.
Yeah. Like this guy's out of his mind. How's he going to get, like you've pointed out, like, where are we going to get the money? You know, like that, that's so crazy to come up with this money to send out. But like, we definitely have just enough money to pay for it. Yeah, and we just did it, which is a great point. And we also, I don't know, it's funny when people go, where are we going to get the money? They only ask that on certain proposed spending of money. Other times it's just like, yeah, of course we have the money.
Yeah, and the arguments I made, it's like, look, do you remember voting for the $4 trillion bailout of Wall Street during the financial
crisis? I don't remember that
crisis.
One. Yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, no one was like, where do you get the money then? Or even the CARES Act that passed nearly unanimously. Like, the headline is $2.2 trillion, which, by the way, could fund something like $1,000 a month for all Americans. For
how would they have
let me do some math?
Okay, go ahead.
Like I think that pays for about a year's worth for everyone. If they just turned around and gave it to us. So this is another thing that most people don't realize, Tom. So people got $1,200. We're like, oh, that's great. That $1,200 might have added up to something like 6 or 7% of the total $2.2 trillion. The vast majority of the money did not go to us. It went, to corporations. Let's call it, 80% plus, went to corporations, and that cash relief portion was very, very small. Most people don't actually sit there and do the math to figure that out.
Yeah, and that's of course very depressing to hear that the money didn't go, because there is nothing, it is awful to consider, poverty in general. It's a horrible, horrible reality. But when you consider that, this year, you have people that, want to work, can work, were working, and they're just in even a position where they're just it's not even an option anymore. You can't even do anything. And how do you get by? I mean, it's just got to feel like the emptiest feeling you can have.
Yeah, for millions of Americans, over 10 million Americans, you have 8 million Americans who've fallen into poverty over the last number of months. And if you think about the industries and occupations that are impacted, it's restaurants and servers and bartenders and cooks, but it's also personal trainers, airline attendants, yoga instructors, security guards, anything that that touched live music, concerts, conventions, events, comedy clubs. The ripple effects just go on and on. Hotels, we have so much work to do to try and actually get us back on our feet. And the thing that breaks my heart is that of the 10 million plus who lost their jobs through no fault of their own, these are for the most part people that did not have a ton of cushion.
Right.
You know what I mean? You have folks who were the best situated, life was inconvenient, but you have the folks who were the worst situated, and it's existential crisis after crisis, eviction, inability to pay for gas or food or fuel. I mean, the rest of it's just, it'd be very angry. And then you have our government unable to do what virtually every other developed country's government has done during this time. So in that environment, it's so crazy that I feel like we're inducing craziness.
Mm-hmm.
We're making it easier to be unreasonable. And that is, that's a terrible state of affairs.
Yeah, it is terrible, but you feel like we are actually getting closer to Congress kind of coming on board with this, right? This is within reach.
Well, I'm working on it every day. I think there's going to be a relief bill of some kind, certainly in the new year, because after Joe gets sworn in and Congress gets sworn in, they'll hammer out something.
Whoa, 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 whoa. You got to count the legal votes first, buddy. Don't give me this shit about Joe getting sworn in. Go ahead.
Like I was saying, Tom.
Sorry.
So there'll be a relief bill of some kind, mm-hmm, early next year, which is way too late. It should have passed months ago. There will be a cash component of that. And one of the things I'm working hard on is making the cash component bigger and more central. In my mind, the cash component should be the bread and butter of this whole thing, because if you get money into people's hands, I was talking to a very senior economist who I won't name, but he was he was in charge of a lot of stuff. And he said one of the great things about cash relief is that you put money into someone's hands and you're guaranteed that the worst case scenario is that they're just going to stick it in the bank and then spend it later.
Yeah.
That's the worst case scenario.
Yeah.
And what's going to happen the vast majority of the time is they're just going to spend it immediately.
Yeah.
So he said that's a pretty good solution, because a lot of the other things you're going to try, you're going to plow money into institutions and environments where you're actually kind of guessing. And the fact is right now, if I plow millions of dollars into a medium-sized company, is that company going to lay off fewer workers. You know, I mean, you can try and tie it to various conditions.
Sure.
But you know, that's what you try and do. But there are a lot of these environments where it's actually somewhat unclear. Like, you have to kind of hope. And if you put money into people's hands, you're pretty confident that that person's going to spend it, or worst case, save and spend it later.
And let's not forget also that, like, that's the economic benefit of doing this, like, to that person's life and the environment. But there's also, I think, that factor of, if you're one of somebody who really needs that relief and that check comes to you, that you have cash in hand, what that does to so many people's emotions, you know, like your own mind and emotion and your household and your family, you know, to feel that relief, it is, you can't even almost put a price on that. You know, when you're struggling and you get a check, it's an amazing feeling.
It's like a boot comes off your throat.
Yeah.
You know, we can really help people feel like they have a future, like that their kids are going to be all right. I mean, it's in our ability to do this. So I'm fighting for it every day, Tom. I am optimistic. Certainly the will of the people is there. If anyone's really into this and they want to help, our website's movehumanityforward.com. And then you can keep track of what we're doing and lend a hand. But we're working on it all the time. We have some other fun things cooking too. But it's all about cash. I mean, I am heading to Georgia. But like in that case, our organization is supporting other orgs. It's fun having an org, I got to say, Tom.
Yeah.
You know, you run for president and then people get into it and then you wind up with all these people that are excited about stuff you're doing. So it's incredible to be able to have an impact in various ways.
Can I ask you
really
this?
Grateful for it.
About, because I've actually realized that I don't think I've ever spoken to somebody that's run for president. That like when you actually make the decision to say I'm actually going to, right? Like, now it's just a considerate, but you go like, I'm doing it. Does it feel crazy that you're saying I could be president of the United States? Is it like a surreal feeling?
Yeah, it was surreal. And it was difficult because you would say those words, I'm running for president, to folks that know you. And they are like, president of what?
Yeah.
or whatever it happens to be. And then you're like, president of the United States.
Yeah,
and
not of the book club.
Oh. And so there was like a real uphill battle for months, because I filed the paperwork in November 2017 and then announced in February of 2018, and no one gave a shit about like the 2020 race in early 2018. And so there was approximately a year of my just being like, I'm running for president, and then people are like, are you now? and so it required like a real belief and fortitude, and to some extent, like a kind of laissez-faire attitude where it's like, yeah, you know, don't take it too seriously. I mean, one stupid story I tell that might be indicative is that I had an event at one of my boys' school. There was like a book thing, and I wrote a book. And so I was like, I'll do this event at the school. And I thought it might be good to, like, you know, let folks in the community know what I was doing. And like, no one showed up. it was like, and then the following year, people, you know, when it became like a campaign that everyone was reading about in the news and whatnot, people who were other parents in the school were like, oh my gosh, like that thing was real. Cause you know, I guess they got the message and it was like,
but when you go to those early events, like, cause I wonder about this and like the school or something and no one shows up, would you feel dejected? Would you be like, I don't know if I should keep doing this?
Well, I'm a human being. So certainly there were times where I was like, well, that's not very cool. But, but I'm also an entrepreneur, and when you're an entrepreneur, you set yourself like a goal and a timeline. And I set out, said, look, I'm running for president. That means I'm going to be at this through, you know, in my mind, it was, you know, 2020. And so anything that happens to me between now and 2020 is just part of the the story, the building process. And so no matter what you did to me during those 2 years, I was just going to be like, whatever, like, you know, and I knew that going in, like when you flip that switch and decide to do it. And it's not that dissimilar from if you start a business. Let's say I started a business and it was like Andrew's Cupcakes, which would be a terrible business because, you know, I'm shit for baking. Anyway, and then you took money from people, which I did, not big money, but like I went to my friends and was like, hey, I'm running for president. Like, donate, you know, some money. And then some of them donated, like, you know, $1,000 or $2,000. Then if you take someone else's money for your presidential campaign or Andrew's Cupcakes, then you essentially forfeit the ability to be negative for those couple of years. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
Because, like, let's say if you invested in Andrew's Cupcakes and then I go to someone and be like, try my cupcakes, and they like spit them out, they're like, oh, these are terrible. Then you can't be like, oh, like, well, I guess that's
I quit. Yep, I'm done.
You have to be like, well, shoot, I guess I should improve the cupcakes.
Yeah, I'd be like, hey, Andrew, so I gave you thousands of dollars for these goddamn cupcakes. Just make better cupcakes, man. Jesus.
Well, part of it too, Tom, I'll tell you what the real thing was, like the real thing that does make me self-conscious, is you have a team around you.
Yeah.
So imagine like having these idealistic folks working for the campaign and then show up to an event and like no one's there. And so I'm certainly not allowed to be sour, because if I'm sour, then the people that were working with me will be like abandoning shit right and left.
That's a good point.
And if anything, and if there's anyone's fault that no one showed up to the event, it's my fault for not being cooler. You know what I mean? So that there's like no one to look at.
That's a good point.
It would be like if... It would be like if a comedian showed up to a club and then like no one had come to the comedian and he started like yelling at his team. It's like, what the hell are you talking about? Be funnier.
Well, I know quite a bit of comedians that could listen to that advice. a lot. So one other thing I wanted to touch upon with regard to Trump and his, presidency coming to an end here. Is that I'm going to bet, I don't know if you would agree with me, I'm going to guess that he is not going to follow in the tradition of past presidents who upon the day of departure go, I had my time, it is now your time, and I will step back and retire. You know, so
they will probably set up a replica of the Oval Office and then have him sit there.
Yes.
And then just like film it, and it'll be like this kind of weird phantom parallel universe where he's still the president.
Is there responsibility of at least the major outlets to not cover everything he does post-presidency? Because I feel like coverage of what he does and says at every moment does further that divide and make things more volatile. And I think that, like, if he's, you know, your presidency is over, you know, covering it as if you were a president is not fair to even the whole general public.
So there was Trump as candidate, and the media networks covered him way much. I think I saw one story that said they gave him $1 billion worth of free coverage.
Yeah.
And it helps get him elected. Then he becomes president, and then they cover everything he does. And then you're like, okay. He's the president, so I guess, you know, you can't fault a news station for just talking about everything he says and does. Then he leaves. At that point, you have to draw a line and say, like, hey, is it really newsworthy
what
the former president is tweeting about or doing? I certainly hope that networks move on from Trump. One tough truth, though, Tom, is that Trump has been very, very good for a lot of businesses and a lot of ratings. And so there's going to be a temptation for them to reach back because covering some Biden industry panel is going to be much less interesting than covering Trump's latest ramblings. So there is a line to be drawn, though. I hope that the media does move on, because a lot of Americans are ready to move on. I mean, what are we going to do? Just fixate on this guy?
That's what I'm saying.
Like that, you know?
Yeah, it's like there's got to be an end to it at some point. Are we going to see you in the Biden administration? Can I ask? You're on the spot with Tom's news. Are you going to be...
That's why everyone should be looking to you for their news.
I know.
I'll only hear it here.
Okay.
So, I'm talking to the administration. I've got a, you know, like certainly a willingness to serve. There may be different paths for me in terms of service, but I'm going to do something that I think is going to have a positive impact. Because we really need it, Tom. I mean, again, these 71 million Americans, like the tens of millions who are suffering right now. Like I ran for president because I genuinely thought that things were not going well for a lot of people and I could do something about it. And my sense of that is higher now than it was.
Sure.
Like, so this isn't a time for Andrew to be like, oh, you know, like mission accomplished type shit. It's like the urgency is higher, not lower.
Mm-hmm.
So I should be making a decision and have something out in the world about my next steps relatively soon, I would say, you know, like the next number of probably like sometime around, you know, the holidays. But I've got like a fire burning where like I need to freaking help move us in the right direction.
Will you?
Things are going terribly.
Yes. Will you give us the exclusive when you make that announcement?
Be back on your podcast.
Yes.
You know, I think I owe some other folks that one.
Come on, man. So
figure that out. Other people were there for me when I was running, Tom. Where
I was there. I was there. Look at your DMs. So. look, I think it's just, it is a great thing that we have you, seriously in society and dedicating yourself and committing to like improving society and humanity. It's a rare thing. So I think I want you to stay in administrations and run for office, because I mean, I connect to you much more so than I have any other guy that looks like my dad or uncle. So I'm very hopeful that you keep you know, in what you're doing.
Well, thanks, Tom. It means a lot. You know, I feel like a natural kinship with you and a lot of the folks who do what you do for a living. And I'm not going anywhere because our kids aren't going anywhere, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, like, what choice do you have, really? Like, you know, we have to make these things better or just sort of shrug and be like, well, I guess we're, you know, I'll go into hell in a handbasket. And like, and I'm now one of the, you know, relatively small number of people, you may be one too, who actually might be able to help.
Yeah.
Know, genuinely. Because like a lot of folks will not be able to change our course, but I feel like I might be able to, you might be able to, some of the people that we know might be able to. And so it's kind of a jerk move to walk away from that, that responsibility if you feel, or opportunity, like if you feel you can make a difference. So don't worry, I'm not going anywhere.
Good.
My kids, good. I used to joke all the time, like my kids are not very rugged, so like we need to make things better because they're gonna fare very poorly like in the country that is tearing itself apart.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to hear that. Let me ask you, everyone wants to know, are you going to drop the turkey slicer on Vince McMahon in the WWE? That's a famous wrestling.
The labor
wrestling
practices word. Of the WWE are so wrong, and they have been wrong for a long time, decades really. And it was almost somewhat justifiable when they were like coming up, and you know, it was like this kind of carny roots business.
Mm-hmm.
But now it makes zero sense when you're like a multi-billion-dollar public company, you know, one of the top-rated shows on TV, and you're still calling people independent contractors. Now he's restricting them from Twitch and Cameo. Are you kidding me?
Right.
And at least one of the wrestlers just got fired
for tweeting.
She had previously.
For like.
Yeah, she had previous. She just tweeted something that seemed like pro-union, union organized
yeah.
labor, and then she gets fired. And like, is that a coincidence? I mean, like, tell me other performers aren't looking at and being like, huh, like maybe I should not say a word about unions because then they just might fire me too.
Right.
So I'm optimistic that the time for examining the WWE's labor practices is way overdue when it will happen under this administration.
Wow.
And I do have the ability to help on that score. You know, either I'm going to be in a role where I might be able to do it, but at a minimum, I can just call someone in the administration, because it's a small world at this point, you know, like I know enough people where I can just be like, hey, like, get me the, you know, National Labor Relations Board, or the labor secretary on the phone. So it's coming, you know. I mean, I hope that they do the, I mean, there's no evidence of this. I was going to say, I hope they do the right thing even before we get there. But it doesn't seem like that's where the where it's going if they're firing people and doing these switch restrictions right now.
You hear that, so Vince McMahon? Coming. You hear that? You're going to be covered in turkey. Sorry, go ahead.
It's coming. Like it's just right. You know, I can't tell you how many former performers and current performers have reached out to me, be like, "Yo, if you can do something about it, that would be straight up," because they know they're getting exploited. But it's very, very hard for them to do anything about it because he holds all the cards.
Of course, and there's other. I mean, other multi-billion-dollar, I would say, sports entertainment franchises that could be encouraged to do more of the fair thing. But I'm very happy that you're going to tackle that as well. Before you go here, will you let me know what you're going to be doing down in Georgia? I know they have the big state runoff coming up. Are you going down there to, like, you know, register more voters or encourage people, or what's the plan?
Yeah, I'm going to go down and try and activate energy around voting, because a lot of people still are unregistered, and a lot of people are registered, but they think the election's over and think that's it.
Yeah.
So I've got an event with young people who are in high school, some of whom might have turned 18. So that's very exciting. I've got an event with the WNBA. That's super fun. I'm supposed to see my friend Dominique Wilkins.
The man, the human highlight reel.
Yeah. And then I know you and I are the age where we understand that Neek is like an all-time great, and
dude.
We can like have these images of him cramming on people in our minds. I have an event with some Asian American leaders, and Asian Americans are 4.7% of the vote in Georgia. So I'm just going to be doing things that can help animate voters there. Probably have some social media from there too, so that folks will be like, "What's going on?" They'll be like, "Oh, Yang's in Georgia. Why do I care?" And then be like, "Oh, it's because the Senate hangs in the balance." And one of the things I've been saying to myself is, if you give Washington an excuse, it'll take it. You know what I mean? Like, if they're looking at each other being like, well, it's the other guy's fault, then we could be waiting for cash relief and everything else for a longer time. Whereas if you clear excuses out, then maybe we have a chance to get something done that'll actually help people that are listening to this.
Wow. So if people want to get involved in any way, is it Move Humanity Forward?
Yeah, the organization's called Humanity Forward, right. But our website's movehumanityforward.com. Mm-hmm. We're always working on something. You can get involved as a volunteer. You can just put down your email address, you know, donate money, like whatever you want. We also have a relief effort where we've given $10 million to struggling American families. Thank you, donors. Really,
wow.
It's so cool what you can do. So we've given $10 million to about 20,000 families. So it averages out to about $500 each. So we're working with an org called the 1K Project to do that now. So if you want to donate to struggling families, you can do that. You can also, if you're an employer, you can sponsor a family to receive that money because of a change in circumstance on their part. So we like to walk the walk. Like, I'm trying to lobby for cash relief. But it's easier to lobby for cash relief if you demonstrate that, you know, that's what you're doing too.
That's incredible, man. You're doing amazing work. It's really, I don't know. It's encouraging. It makes me feel good that there's people out there like you, thinking like that. So we can donate on that site just to help struggling families. This is not a political thing. If you just want to help people who need help, you can just go there and donate.
Yeah, if you go to movehumanityforward.com and then you click through the 1K project, you can just give money to, you can actually even see the family that you're helping. So there are ways to help. We certainly need to keep this movement growing because the problems are getting worse, not better, just like the way we opened up this conversation, Tom. But don't worry about it. When everyone's coming to you for their news, everything will be better. They'll just turn off.
I'm so happy.
And One America Network.
That you have finally acknowledged the great newsman that I am. And I feel like it's finally making its way through the channels, that this is the place to go.
Yes. Come here. Come to the cave. Look at this.
Look at this, man.
Some infomercial action. That's why they keep me around.
Are you, before you leave, are you very stoked about the possibility of James Harden going to the Brooklyn Nets?
I am stoked about it because, yeah. You know, like I'm a Nets fan. I think it'd be fun and good for the league. I will say that if I'm Houston, I probably don't just do that because he wants you to, because he's got 2 more years on his deal. Mm-hmm. He might be able to max out his value in a particular way. I really do like the Nets players that would be going to Houston. I think Caris LeVert and Dinwiddie are both very good. But if you're the Rockets, you might think you can get some more value. So I don't know how it plays out. But if it does end up that Harden's on the Nets, I think it's going to be the story. I'm also a Steve Nash guy too. I met Steve Nash a while back in New York City.
Yeah.
So like, you know, it'd be a fascinating story. And the East needs like a super team like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, you've got like the super Lakers coming. That would be a clash of the ages, like the super Lakers against the super Nets.
Yeah.
Though the way we're describing this too, you and I grew up in an era where it wasn't super team versus super team. So,
I do kind of miss that,
you know,
a little bit. Like when we grew up, you know, I was telling somebody, cause there was a period where I didn't follow like any of the like NBA stuff. And they were like, why? I was like, you know, when I was a kid, it was like, you know, Isaiah, and you knew that that was a Piston, and Clyde Drexler, and, you know, Jordan, and like everybody had like, I don't know, their identity. It was like, it really was like teams would stay teams for a long period of time. I mean, the you know, the business and the game changed. And I want to say that I feel like baseball was kind of like that first, of just like, you know, super signing like huge caps and making a super team. But it's just different now. It is different. Guys just switch all over the place, and it is what it is, you know?
Yeah, it is different. You got to try and not be a fuddy-duddy, being like, in my day.
But yeah,
it,
yeah,
it is
course.
True, man. And like but in the 90s, it was, you know, I loved those Knicks teams. It was like not just Ewing, but Starks and Oakley and
Mason. And, dude, and those teams were like straight
Harper
up.
And all those dudes.
They were like, if we lose this game, you're going to have teeth knocked out of your mouth, like during the game. Like they were such a physical team.
Yeah, and it was gritty, and it felt like it had an identity that was aligned with the New York market and whatnot. So those are the times that I remember fondly. But you know, like I'll be psyched for Super Team Nets too.
Sure,
probably go watch a game as we win the title in 2021.
Whoa, bold predictions there. Bold predictions. You don't just get hard hitting news here on Tom YMH Talks. You also get sports predictions.
Is that 2021? I'm trying to do this. Yeah, I wouldn't start then. Yeah,
dude, it's so crazy. You know, when you're a comic, your agents hit you up with offers for like for shows, right? So they'll go like, hey, you have an offer to do you know, this Phoenix venue, and usually it'll be like in 6 months or 9 months. I am booked through 2022, and I get emails. It'll be like, hey, so Philly's confirmed for November. I'm like, for November? And they're like, for November of 2022, you have a a week of work. And I'm like, what? It just feels freaky. It's just weird, you know?
Well, good for you, Tom.
Thanks.
That's exciting.
And by the way, I'll leave tickets at every show until you come. Just like in those movies where they're like, where's my dad?
I will hit you up, man. I'm going to surprise you. You know what? I will come if you let me just randomly pop on stage and just like amuse everyone for like, you know, like 10 confused seconds, and then I'll like walk on off. So that'll be a done deal. So if you go to Tom Segura's shows, you should know that eventually Andrew Yang's going to just pop up at one of them. Nice.
You have an open offer. You have an open offer. Absolutely. Anytime you want, man. Anytime you want. Thank you very much for your time today, man. I really enjoy talking to you. Thank you so much, Andrew.
You too, Tom. Be well. Stay safe. And, you know, like, see you at the club in November 2022.
Sounds good. Count the votes, bro. You got to count the votes.
Bye, guys.
Bye, man.
Acupuncture no more. Hi, thank you for watching that episode of Your Mom's House. Please continue to watch more. You can see all these where my hand's gesturing. You can click on those. And please subscribe if you have not yet. And subscribe button, and then we'll get your money. Thanks.